It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast.
It's already 2013. How did that happen? Time is a bitch. How you doing, Will?
Well, speaking of the new year starting off, I went to a lovely New Year's Eve party at a former guest of the podcast's home.
Who's home?
Ethan Brant.
Remember this guest?
Well, anyway,
Brokowski.
Yeah. Brokowski, yeah.
What's his home like? Have we ever been there?
Lovely place.
I'm sure.
Lovely home. Lots of beautiful women at this party, by the way.
But?
Lots of beautiful Jewish women. And as you know, I like the Semitic good looks, even though I'm not a Jew. And I was in many scenarios throughout the evening where I found myself where they would say something that felt a little like Jewish inside baseball. Mm-hmm. And I would wildly shout, "I'm not a Jew." Because I wanted to let them know.
So basically you're any person on the streets of Warsaw in 1940.
That's true. That's
okay. True. Just clarify.
Yes.
But I'm glad you enjoyed yourself.
It was a good time.
I spent my New Year's Eve at a party in the neighborhood thrown by a friend of mine, and I woke up sober as all hell on January 1st, which was a strange sensation, but I still managed to eke out Kill Bill Volume 1.
Well, but not 2.
Not 2. I got busy. I couldn't watch both movies on the same day.
You disgust me.
I know. I'm ashamed to myself, to my family, and to my religion.
Well, what's going on in the world of Will Sean Podcast?
It's 2013, a whole new year. We're getting towards our 50th episode, but... you know, more of the same. We still have the Facebook page, Twitter, all the good stuff. We're on Stitcher, iTunes, all the places you can find us online.
And, you know, I know we had a week off, so I hope everyone had a chance to catch up. And about that Facebook page.
Yeah.
You have a goal.
Yep. Our goal for 2013 is to get to 500 likes. That's more than double what we currently have, but I think we can do it.
And a few listeners have given me crap. They said I was too hard on all the listeners about liking the Facebook page. They didn't want to hear about it. Well, guess what? I stopped getting on you about liking the Facebook page. You know what happened? Nobody knew liked the Facebook page. So you want to know what? You fucking listeners, go like the Facebook page. You bunch of assholes. Hey, we're starting the year off right.
That's it.
Positivity. Who's our sponsor this week?
This week's episode is brought to you by Trixadecaphobics Anonymous. Are you terrified by the number 13? Does the fact that we are now living in the year 2013 send a shiver down your spine and a chill to your bones? Well, why not meet and commiserate other like-minded superstitious assholes such as yourself in a safe, non-threatening environment? Meetings are held at the Airport Sheraton on the 14th of every month in the Aloha Room. Will, are you afraid of the number 13?
No, I'm afraid of the number 17.
17, okay, yeah. So in 2017, going to be a ball of fear.
We're going to have problems. On the show today, we're going to be discussing a great many things. A lot of movies happened while we were away. We're going to talk about them. Also, America's favorite whore is pregnant. We're going to mention that. And a movie-related enemy. I'm going to get on a few people who've got some issues with some movies I like. But first, our guest today, she's a writer. She's writing on the television show... Wedding Band. I almost said The Wedding Band, but I believe it's just Wedding Band. Sarah F. Kami.
Hello.
Hi there.
Direct from Texas.
Woohoo.
Where in Texas are you talking to us from?
Austin.
Austin. That's the cool city, right?
It is the cool. It's hip.
Is
it? We got South by here.
It's the liberal jewel of Texas.
I thought that was the Alamo.
Now, You were originally going to be in town, but you stayed behind. You said something about making dinner for your parents or something like that.
Yeah, their 30th anniversary.
Wow. 30 years. That's like being married my entire lifespan.
I know. And they laugh at each other's jokes still. It's amazing.
Who's drugging whom?
Oh, that's cynical.
I'm not cynical. I'm very...
At least your grammar is excellent.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. Well, so I could take that to my cold, lonely grave. But welcome on the show. Thank you so much for coming on. And,
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad we had this work out. So Sarah, let's tell us a little bit about yourself. Are you clearly not from Los Angeles originally?
Right, right. I grew up in Austin, Texas. I was actually more of a wonk growing up, like really into politics and the news.
Oh.
Yeah, I like literally would jerk off to the Star Report about Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton.
There's some hot shit in there.
There actually really is. It's pretty inappropriate.
He was our sexiest president.
You know what? For a while, I was giving out copies of the Star Report as like birthday presents and stuff to
no
people.
No way.
Yeah, just it's such a random thing. You give them that, or you give them also the report on the JFK assassination. And people are like, what the like, what? Okay, fine.
Wait, you handed out the Warren Commission?
The Warren Commission copies the Star Report for, like, presents for a while.
I'm kind of upset I've never received one of these.
Well, let's see what Santa puts in your stocking next year.
So then what brought you from Texas here to Los Angeles?
So, you know, I interned on Capitol Hill in D.C., and then I was so disillusioned. I was like, this is all drama. This is all theater.
So instead...
So I was like, well, forget it. I'll go to L.A. where I can say whatever I want.
So at least because they know what... We're honest about our
shallowness and our fakeness.
Exactly.
And we're also not setting forth public policy.
Right, right. We just shape culture.
So you came out here then, and, like, what was your... Like I mentioned, you write now on the show. Like, what got you started into writing? Like, what got you,
Well, you know, I won this little contest through Upright Citizens Brigade and NBC. So that landed me like a little... It got me this spiel online that made me look legit.
Okay.
It was all through chance. You know, I happened to meet a literary manager. I was very vague in what I wanted to do. Originally, I had an eye for casting because I like attractive people.
Who doesn't?
join the club, right? So... you know, then I basically, it just kind of got planted in my head that writing for television was lucrative.
Isn't it?
It is. Thank God.
Oh.
So, yeah, I landed a literary manager who helped me get an agent. And then my first job was Wilfred on FX.
So how was that? So, that I mean, that's a pretty popular show.
For people
who
don't know, Wilfred is a television show on FX, which is, it stars Elijah Wood, and it's an American remake of a popular Australian show that ran for a few seasons. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah.
And so what was that like? Were they writing new episodes, or were they essentially adapting existing episodes for American television?
Well, they, you know, the basically the creator of the Australian series got to be co-EP, the dog, the okay. Australian guy, the dog, Jason. So he was in the room... bickering with the hired showrunner every day about what the show was going to be.
Excellent.
So I don't know, did you ever see the original?
I did. I saw the pilot. I watched the first two episodes. It didn't grab me, I must admit, but I am familiar with it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was hugely different than the Australian series. The American version was very cookie cutter between us.
Okay.
It didn't have that surreal, fun, dark vibe that the Australian version had.
And that's what the dog was going for. He wanted a more surreal vibe, and they weren't letting him have it. Was that the
exactly
problem?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, it was a total tug of war every day.
But the show, I've heard a lot more buzz about it in its second season. So did he ultimately like win them over,
or did it find its own voice?
Yeah. Well, the boss that I couldn't stand ended up getting fired.
Oh,
okay. Was that
after I jumped ship? They always say in the press like he chose to step down, but he got fired. So
he was suffering from exhaustion.
Oh, give me a break! All he wants is his prostate played with.
Good to know.
We're getting the dirt. We're getting the Wilfred dirt.
So in the second season, they brought in a new showrunner then, and it found a different tone. Is what you're saying.
Yeah. I think it's getting in its rhythm. I have to admit, I haven't watched it either.
Okay, so all right, let's move on from that then.
Well, but then
it was
from
a good first. You know what? It was a good first credit.
Yeah, excellent. I mean, it was definitely, and it was just, you know, it's great to be on a show that actually made it to air and had episodes up and is still, you know, alive in its second, third season.
So So what was your step afterwards? So you got on to, you win this contest, you get on Wilfred, I'm assuming through getting a manager, agent, you get on Wilfred, and then what was the next step when you left Wilfred? Like, how did that, like, was that a... Did you want to leave, but like, was that a, oh fuck, I'm losing myself in my words.
I don't know what you're trying to say.
like, did you have something lined up when you were leaving, or did you just leave the show, like, in, you had no idea what you were going to do next.
You know, we went on hiatus, and I was convinced, I mean, you know, you look back, I was convinced it wasn't even going to, you know, survive the first season. I was the only girl in the room. It was just a very, I knew I didn't want to go back. I mean, obviously my reps wanted me to go back. But I didn't want to, and then fortunately, different networks have a different timeline for their shows and their contracts, so I landed on something else before it even became an option go back for the second season.
You said you were the only girl in the writer's room, I guess, on this. Was it,
yes.
Did it feel like, did you feel...
molested?
Did you feel like kind of outcasted? Did you feel like, was it like a boys' club thing, or did you fit right in? Like, how did that...
You know what? I was kind of expected to be the token girl. And in retrospect, you know, like when I had my interview, I got my hair did and I looked cute. So I think that I was kind of pretending to be someone I wasn't to get hired.
Okay.
Because the boss, look, the showrunner was, he's very old school. Like, he actually was really, I think Sean and I have discussed this, he was really much more of an executive type.
Right.
Like, he really got lucky with the way things worked out. Like, you know, Seth MacFarlane fell in his lap when he was an executive. So he ended up getting a co-creator credit on Family Guy. Then he got pushed out because nobody can stand him. Wow, I should not keep talking about this stuff.
So you got your hair did and you got all pretty for your interview.
So anyway, yeah, the point, you know, so then in the room, you know, the showrunner would, Zuckerman, whatever, you can Google it. He would turn to me and be like, well, yeah, but girls know when their friend is hotter than them, right? Like, when they go out. Like, he would ask all these token girl questions. All my comedy comes from the fact that actually I'm so much a man on the inside. Like, you know, like, I write male voices a lot better. I just have that male humor. So it was really... I mean, looking back, should I have played the game a little more and bullshit? Maybe. But I don't have...
Or you could have just, like, you could be like a sleeper agent where you're just blatantly lying. Oh, yeah, no, when girls go out, no, they're clueless. They don't know what their other friends look like. And just spread lies and misinformation.
I know. You know what? I had a pretty bad attitude. It's pretty challenging being a staff writer, I think, when you're not into the sensibility of the show.
Okay.
Because it's, like, imagine, okay, so your day-to-day, you know, you go to work. You have a boss, right? And usually your boss is old and doesn't have an edge because they're a dad. It's pretty, you know, standard. So, but it's easy. Like, you just kind of do the small talk and that's it. But when you're in a writer's room, in a sitcom room, every second you're merging minds. Every second you're sharing life experience with each other. And I'm a bad bullshitter.
Okay.
Which is why I've been developing movies lately. Thank God.
Oh. Well, you said you had a gig during that hiatus that you were going to move on anyway. Is that what you work on now? Wedding Band?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that show.
Yeah, it has Brian Austin Green. It's a kind of like The Wedding Singer in that it's a rock band who never hit it big, so they end up playing weddings and various events, bat mitzvahs, bar mitzvahs.
So is the structure of the show then each week is a different event?
Yes. That's the kind of the episodic engine. And then, of course, they have their personal storylines going on as well.
Well, I would hope so.
You know what's funny, Brian Austin Green, because I never watched like 90210
nah,
or anything
neither.
Like that. But I never really thought much of Brian Austin Green, but I actually really fucking loved him on that Terminator show, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. And I thought he was like, maybe it was because I didn't expect it, but I thought he was kind of badass on it. I don't know
if
you ever watched that.
He's super sweet.
Is he?
He's super sweet. He's a really great guy. He's married to Megan Fox. I think they had their first baby.
Yeah, they did.
They did. Look, we're well aware of who he's married to. And in fact, I even have it written down if Megan Fox ever stops by the show.
She's tiny. You'd love her. She's tiny in real life.
Well, you know.
It's adorable. We had her in an episode.
I know. Well, you know, when you hire Brian Austin Green, what you're secretly hoping is that she shows up and that, you know.
What did she do on the episode?
She was a fat vegan.
So you hire Megan Fox to play against type? That's, you know, did you see This Is 40?
Yeah.
Where, you know, Judd Apatow really embraced her talents in that role.
Well, I sense that you're being sarcastic there, Sean.
You know what?
I think she was good in the movie. I don't think Megan Fox is bad, because I think Megan Fox knows what her strengths are as a performer. And yes, they might be like, I mean, you see something like Jennifer's Body, which we could argue about how good or bad that film is, but she's playing a character. She knows exactly how to play that character, and I think she plays it well.
God bless her. You write by Sarah Afkami. Now, is that a gnome de scribble, or what are we looking at here?
No, it's so funny that you mentioned that. I would love to come up with a professional name. I want something just easy and clean, just less ethnic.
You ready for it?
I'm ready.
Sarah Fox.
Oh, God.
It's straight and to the point. It's got that one syllable last name.
Can we actually for a moment talk about This Is 40? Have you seen it, Will?
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
I thought there were some great scenes and some funniness, but what happened to structure? What happened to a plot?
It's almost like avant-garde in its weird way. Like Apatow takes his real family and puts another man in charge of it.
It's a $45 million home film.
I mean...
It's creepy at the core.
There's no structure. Yeah, I mean, I laughed, but it's aimless. I mean, I couldn't tell you if they even grew as people in the movie.
There was a little bit of character development. Here's how I approach This Is 40. It's no different in its own way than Star Wars would be, or any sci-fi movie. You just need to accept the world of these people and their lives and just kind of go with it. And this is the... You know,
but
it's John Carter.
Star Wars has a story. They have to blow up a Death Star.
And here they need to blow up their own self-involved, solipsistic view of themselves and come to terms with their poor relations with their fathers. No?
Right.
What I like most about it is it validated the ending of Lost. Which I love the ending of Lost, and I take shit for it. But and by the way, you have someone from Lost. Isn't someone from Lost?
Yeah,
on...
Harold Perrineau.
Yes.
Black guy from Lost.
He was great on Lost, and now he's the black guy in The Wedding Band.
Right. You know, it's so funny. In the room, early on, I really wanted to make him neurotic. Because I was like, we've never had a black neurotic on TV.
And that got shot down, I would assume.
It did. And so did I wanted to make the fat guy bisexual.
I'll tell you what, I love all your ideas, because these are the things that I would want to do if I was writing on a show, which is
you
probably
why I'm
not writing.
You should write a spec for Eddie Murphy, where he could play a fat, neurotic bisexual.
That's too much. Nobody wants to see a black man suck cock.
That also might be a little too close to type for Eddie.
Yeah, with the tranny. God, Sean, have some sensitivity.
How about Sarah Tranny? That's a good name.
Sarah Tranny.
Well, you can't go with Sarah June because that's already been taken, but...
Oh, I know. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Oh, Sarah Sabzi.
Ew. You know, I really want to change it to... Like, I want a very gender-neutral first name, like Lee.
Like, for a first name or for a...
For the
first name. Like Pat or Lee or Brad or something. We'll talk
Brad,
about it.
Brad? You want to be Brad?
This is not for the audience.
Well, you know what? You mentioned a movie I wanted to talk about. We should might as well start to get into some of the topics. But before we do, Wedding Band is on TBS. What night is it on?
Saturday nights.
Saturday nights. And I believe the season finale is going to be coming up soon. Am I correct?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
coming
Great
up.
Great time to jump in and catch up with your favorite characters.
Well, you could catch up now because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, if my research is correct, the season finale is January 19th.
There you go.
So you have plenty of time to catch up. The episodes, they're online. They're on the TBS. You could catch up and check it out. Season finale, Wedding Band, January 19th. Before we move on to topics, is there anything else you'd like to plug, Sarah?
You know, actually not at the moment because this thing is still under development. But... Keep your ear out. Keep your ear out for a modern take on Brewster's Millions.
Oh, really?
Oh shit, really?
Yeah.
Brewster's Billions?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Well, same concept, Richard Pryor's in
just
it.
Inflation.
The problem is going to be, though, we have to look for someone named Lee Tranny to be writing it. We're never going to know it was you who wrote it.
So confusing. I'll get it all linked.
Well, you know... Let's move on to some of these topics here. And I mentioned in the thing, and we were mentioning a little bit off air about e-programming. I won't mention why we were mentioning it, but we mentioned it. And I don't know if you heard, but right before the new year,
a child is born in Bethlehem.
Exactly. Kim Kardashian and Kanye West are having a baby. So you know what this means. We're fucked with more hours of Kim Kardashian on television. Executives at E already have a million ways to exploit this.
I heard they already set up a command center, and they just renewed their contract for 18 more years.
I mean, this is a nightmare. There are too many of these Kardashians. And I have a question, and maybe let me ask you this, Sarah. How come Kim Kardashian hasn't gone away? Because people like Paris Hilton and stuff, eventually they kind of go away. Like, we never hear about her anymore. But Kim Kardashian, her show remains popular. Do you have any theory onto this?
You know, I really don't, other than the fact that I think, I mean, people are just bored, and maybe she just keeps, she cries a lot. I think people love seeing someone that's more of a mess than themselves.
Well, she is, I mean, I guess she does put her vulnerabilities out there more now that you're saying, I hate to give her credit to know what she's doing, but I guess she does do that.
I've never watched even more than 2 minutes of any of the iterations of the Kardashian empire, but I would assume that part of it is savvy marketing. They have enough kids in the factory that they could just keep pumping out spinoffs and shows, and you know, like them or not, they're very cannily packaged and presented, and they definitely have a brand.
You know, when we started the thing, I made the joke, America's favorite whore is pregnant, and I only say that because she did. Her whole career is based on a sex tape, right? I mean, that's
with Brandy, with Brandy's brother,
Ray J.
Ray J.
And when apparently, when it was announced that she was pregnant, sales of her sex tape jumped about 800% online.
Have you
You're
guys?
Kidding.
Oh, I've seen it. Oh yeah.
Have you seen the sex tape, Sarah?
No, I did check out Paris's.
Paris's is really
you
like.
You could see a more disinterested woman having sex.
Yeah, I mean, she looks like the worst person to ever sleep with.
Oh, well, she was clearly on many drugs.
But she still looks like a terrible lay. Kim Kardashian at least put a little gusto into what she was doing.
I don't know. I'm from Texas. We love the blonde POV.
The blonde POV? I love how the night vision, though, from the Paris Hilton sex tape almost became a cultural touchstone. Like, all you have to do is throw something in night vision and you automatically conjure up images of the Paris Hilton sex tape. You know, watching the finale of Zero Dark Thirty, I almost expected her to be in one of the rooms there in the compound.
Yeah.
We paused for a laugh that never came.
Well, story of our lives.
You know, I wanted to bring up another TV thing that I noticed while we were away. I was reading, you know, Jimmy Kimmel is moving. Has it happened yet, or is it happening next
it's
week?
It's happening the next week, yeah.
It's happening next week. Jimmy Kimmel is moving to 11:30. So now all the networks, they got everyone starting at 11:30. This just feels like a glut. Like a glut of I mean, I know we already have so many.
Well, you have 11:30, you have. Now you're going to have Jimmy Kimmel, David Letterman, Jay Leno, Conan O'Brien. Oh, is he 11?
And that, he's 11, but his second half hour.
Colbert Report. And Lopez is off the air. So,
I mean, yeah. I don't understand why Kimmel really moved. It seems like it doesn't.
Well, here's the bigger question. Does anyone watch late night television anymore?
I watch Conan. Sarah, do you watch late night Conan?
No.
Nothing.
I like The Daily Show.
I do. I watch The Daily Show and The Colbert Report. I don't see what the purpose of late-night TV is anymore.
You don't watch your network mate, Conan O'Brien, every night?
Well, I try.
But, you TiVo it. You catch up on the weekends.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I still watch Conan because I legitimately think he's
raping people?
He's funny. He's funny. He's legit. Todd Akin would ask if he's legitimately funny,
but,
and he is.
The bigger question is, you know, I understand late-night back in the Johnny Carson, is that what his
Johnny
name is?
Johnny Carson. Jimmy, little Jimmy Carson.
You know, when there was nothing else to watch, you'd lie in bed, you'd watch some funny jokes, some interviews, and you'd fall asleep to it. But now, who's really watching late night TV is...
Me.
It feels like a dated format.
I live an antiquated lifestyle.
Does it need to be an hour? It feels bloated. It feels like they're stretching for jokes. I think with the brilliance of the Colbert Report and Steve and Daily Show, is that they can go in with two segments. It's punchy, it's focused, and then the interviews tend to be types of people that you don't expect to see on late night television. They're interviewing, you know, they joke, but if you have a book, if you're a serious writer or historian or author, the only place now to go and do some publicity is Colbert and Daily Show, because they'll give you the medium for it, and they'll give you the forum to talk about a biography on McKinley or what have you.
You know what's so funny? I stopped watching The Daily Show and Colbert Report, I think, because I watch so much news. Like, I'm constantly watching, like, Maddow and MSNBC and all this stuff that I don't even want to deal with comedically handled news later in the night. I think I just want to see Conan make a funny joke.
See, I'm the opposite. I don't even watch... I refuse to watch cable news. I think it's trash. Any of it.
I know. It's such nonsense.
It is. And
do
it's
you, so do you watch... I mean, because you're obviously a political junkie to a point still, I'd imagine. I mean, do you not watch any of the cable news then, or do you?
You know, I really like Russia Today.
What is that?
It's on satellite. I don't know. I mean, I've
you're the one who's most excited for the Al Jazeera buying current TV.
Or about, what's his name? Gerard Depardieu getting offered Russian citizenship by Vladimir Putin.
I'm very excited about that. No, I mean, look, I think I am in a place where it's like, at some point, it's just masochistic to see all the suffering going on.
On cable news?
So much negativity.
Well, you're talking about in the world.
Right. I mean, I'm saying, like, with the internet, you can cruise through and see what links interest you. You go to the world page. But on these cable channels, it's just constant, like, puff pieces about little girls missing and people shooting each other. It's awful.
It's basically local news writ large. What I love on CNN is they don't even bother to do the news half the time. They go, let's see what's going on Twitter right now. Oh, Patton Oswalt's angry about something.
CNN, I feel like, has become irrelevant in some weird way because it's so boring. I guess I like MSNBC because I like the personalities, a lot of the people delivering me the information. And I feel like Rachel Maddow has an interesting way of breaking down what's gone on that day.
She's like a less sassy Ellen DeGeneres.
Well,
what are you talking about? Rachel Maddow's sassier.
Yeah, Matt has the best. Now,
she doesn't dance.
Here's another thing with late night television that kind of drives me a little crazy. There are new rumors that NBC wants to replace Jay Leno again in 2014 with Jimmy Fallon. Yeah, these are the rumors. They want Fallon.
With Jimmy Fallon?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? That guy has the charisma of a doorknob.
Really? Because I think Jimmy Fallon's doing some of the most interesting stuff on late night television.
And look, here's the thing.
I haven't seen it lately.
His musical segments, the stuff he does musically, is brilliant.
Here's the other thing.
He produced Guys with Kids.
Yes, he did.
Oh, that's right.
My best friend was writing on that.
Hey!
Have you seen it?
No.
I couldn't relate. I don't have any kids that I know of.
And you have a brain.
You are a terrific guest, by the way. If they love Leno so much,
why do they keep trying to kick him out?
Yeah, I mean, are we going to go through this whole thing? Do we have to go through another late night war? Haven't we suffered enough through the late night wars? First we had Leno and Letterman. Now we had
Leno and Conan.
Well, then we had Leno and Conan, and now we have to suffer through a battle between Fallon and Leno. Like this, I just hope if they want to replace him, they just finally get rid of him, put him in one of those in his denim suit in his jalopy, and have him drive out of Burbank.
Aw, little Jay Leno. You know, they say he used to be so edgy.
Letterman said that Leno's both the funniest person he's ever known and also the most insecure person he's also ever known.
And that's coming from David Letterman.
Yeah.
Wow, I can imagine.
Well, you know, even on the weekends, he flies up to Reno, Nevada. He tours. He donates most of his salary, all the money he makes from touring, he gives to charity.
I don't give a shit. Fuck him.
What? Why?
I didn't like the way that whole Conan thing went down. Conan is my man. I love
Conan. You're Team Coco all the way.
I remember, I've never been to a political rally, even though I'm very interested in a lot of politics stuff, but I remember when there were those rallies for Conan, my mother, who adores Conan, called me up and said, you go to that rally and you support Conan. And I stood out in the rain to support Conan O'Brien like a psycho.
Oh, that's cute. How old were you?
How old was I?
A few years ago?
This is like what? Whenever this was going down, what, two years ago? I was like a 30-year-old man.
He's standing in the rain cheering a 6'6" red-haired freak.
I was cheering also a masturbating bear, by the way.
So, and ladies, he's single.
It's true. I am.
You know, Will, I don't know if this is the right time to tell you. My take on masturbation has changed so much. Male masturbation.
Oh, really? Please, share.
I think this is the right time to tell us.
The Old Testament is very anti-spilling seed.
Yes, onanism.
Oh.
They believe that demons come from the death of those potential lives.
Look, I got a lot of demons.
And no, I heard how much you hate Jay Leno. I think it's because you masturbate so much.
So you're saying that men should never masturbate?
No, I'm not saying that. No, I have no opinion on it.
Well, clearly you do.
You said
I don't have an opinion, but the Bible says.
As an anthropologist, I'm merely quoting it.
Oh,
I stand on the whole thing,
Your Honor. So, okay, so basically,
well, other than the penis envy that I clearly have.
To be fair, the Will Sean podcast has taken a very pro masturbation stand.
That's all this is masturbation. So
that's your sponsors next week, right?
Well, we'll see about that. So in absence, so if you don't want men to be masturbating, then what's the solution?
I think the idea is that when you're not jerking off and releasing that libidinal fluid, it goes back up to your brain. So the idea is that he's saving it all for praying and then, you know, giving his wife pleasure.
Wait a second. No, first of all, I assure you, the woman, my non-existent wife, is going to get much more pleasure if I have masturbated sometime earlier. Secondly, the fact that I'm not masturbating it's not good for my brain. It will drive me insane. I won't be able to concentrate.
It's like when you shake up a can of soda. You can't just open the soda because it's going to explode everywhere. You have to gingerly pry it open and let some of the pressure out so that when you're ready to open it, it comes out without making an undue mess in an inopportune time and place. Does that make sense?
What if refraining from jerking off transforms your soda-ness into clear water?
But then I'm still thirsty because it's in the can.
Look, here...
No, you are the can!
Here's the thing. Look,
your metaphor sucks, Sean.
I'm gonna get us back on track with the topics here, but when you come back to town...
Yes,
we have to have
discuss this in person. Clearly, we need to discuss this.
I want to discuss this in person. I want to have a masturbation summit with you.
Yes, and I want to scowl at your crotch.
Yes, I want you to just look angrily at my crotch. Every other woman does. So a lot of movies came out. We just talked about This Is 40, but a ton of other movies that were highly anticipated came out that me and Sean seen. We're going to go through some of them, and then I'm going to rant and rave about something in a minute. But did you see Les Mis yet?
No, I hear it's amazing.
You could skip it.
Me and Sean disagree on this. I think Les Mis, I think although it has some issues, Russell Crowe isn't the strongest singer. Right. I thought it has some second act issues that slowed down. Overall, I thought it was a great musical. I loved Anne Hathaway in it. Hugh Jackman, I thought, gave the best performance of his career. I think it's well worth seeing. I think it's great spectacle. And that's Sean's counter-argument.
I had never seen the stage show. I was vaguely familiar with the songs. I knew the Dream a Dream song from Susan Boyle. And I knew, what's the other one? One Day My Prince Will Come. What's that song?
No, it's not My Prince Will...
It's a song that the hot chick sings in the alley.
Yes, I don't remember the name of it.
Well, I knew that...
Eponine sings it.
Yeah, super hot, gutter chick. But
why ever go for Cosette when you could have Eponine?
For serious. Okay, I don't want to get into a whole thing here, but I didn't like the way it was directed. I thought the story itself, and this is endemic with the material and has nothing to do with the film per se, I thought the story was paper thin, the characters ludicrous, the drama all on the surface.
You also have no heart, I forgot to mention.
I have plenty of heart. I just thought it was an absolute...
You're dead on the inside.
This is true.
It's all that masturbating.
It is all that masturbating. But the what works on the stage, I would imagine, became oddly disorienting on film because there's massive and frequent shifts in tone and scale which are bewildering when put to film. You could have this massive set piece, which then gets shrunk down to a tiny little intimate moment, which is still supposed to feel epic. And the epic scenes felt small, and the small scenes were strangely epic. And there was a discordant note running through the whole thing. Add that to the fact that the camera felt like it was being manhandled by a drunken Steadicam operator, and it didn't add up to an overall pleasant experience for me.
Sarah, go see it. We'll yell at him about it together.
I love yelling at Sean.
It's so much fun.
That's why, he's so excitable.
That's why we do this podcast, just so I can yell at him. did you see Django Unchained?
I did, but I walked out on it. I wasn't in the mood.
Oh, shit! You walked out on it?
I just wasn't in the mood. Someone else had purchased the ticket for me. I gotta tell you, you gotta be in the mood. You gotta be in the mood for all the N-words. You gotta be in the mood for all... It's just, you know...
It's not a feel-good movie.
He's a downer, man.
I'm gonna argue that, without giving things away, I think there is some feel-goodness to it. I think there's actually some very feel-goodness to it, but...
The empowerment vibe.
What was that?
Like an empowerment vibe, right?
Yeah, and also, I mean... I don't want to give away things with
it's
the
a revenge film.
But here's the thing. So at what point did you walk out? Do you remember what the last thing you saw?
Well, I don't want to give anything away.
Did you make it to DiCaprio at least?
Yeah.
I thought DiCaprio was brilliant. He was such a slimeball. Also, Christoph Waltz was put on this earth to read Quentin Tarantino dialogue between this and Inglourious Basterds. Are you a Tarantino fan at all?
I am. I feel like sometimes it's like, an artist inflicts their... Like, I understand sharing your darkness, but sometimes the darkness can go a little... I'm like, I have my own darkness. I don't need your darkness today.
Well, that gets us back to This Is 40.
But, I mean, clearly, I think Tarantino's far more talented than Judd.
Well, clearly.
Oh, it's not even close. I think one's a genius and one is an excellent... comedic writer, and one's a genius.
And finder of talent.
Yeah. One's good at blowing executives. Give me a break.
Well, no, I mean, Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this briefly, Sarah. I mean, sorry to go off Django for a second. You said that, Freaks and Geeks and Undeclared came out of I did have this conversation with you, correct, where we talked about how it came out of a sense of outsiderness and otherness. And like a real fire and a need, and then now his life is too comfortable.
We talked about this on the show with Jesse Conwalla.
Right.
We talked about this with her. Well, what did you think?
I saw Judd Apatow. Excuse me, I interrupted you.
That's fine.
It's okay.
Don't forget. I saw Judd Apatow do some stand-up years ago at Just for Laughs. I'd say it was like 3 years ago. And he talked about his daughter's breasts a lot. And I've never seen his work the same.
Well,
go on. What were you going to say, Will?
Well, I was going to bring us back to Django, and I just thought it was a typical, terrific Tarantino madness. I also thought it was just a really solid Western, and a Western I hadn't really seen.
You're right. It was beautiful. It was shot so well.
Yeah, Robert Richardson. It was a beautiful film. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I think it's actually better than Inglourious Basterds, but...
I disagree.
But I need to let it sit a little bit longer. I still think, in my opinion, Kill Bill is his masterpiece, but I say this over and over again.
I think Inglourious Basterds had more moments of true tension than this film did, which is why I give it Basterds a notch up. But either way, this is a great film. Go see it. Another great film me and Sean saw, and it's one of my absolute favorites of the year, is Zero Dark Thirty, which I know you haven't gotten a chance to see, I'm sure, because you're in Texas, and it hasn't opened up wide yet. It opens up wide January 11th.
Yeah, I have not caught it yet. How was it?
It's excellent. It's so meticulously done. Jessica Chastain, I think, should probably win the Oscar. I thought it was such a great, obsessive performance with a really, I feel, amazing emotional release. I think it's tremendous filmmaking. I've been a Bigelow fan for years.
Deuce Bigelow?
Yeah, Deuce. I've been a Deuce director, Catherine Deuce Bigelow. I've been a fan of her work forever, and I'm so glad that since Hurt Locker and now this, she's getting a lot of credit she deserves, because I was a big fan of Near Dark and Strange Days and all these great films.
Actually, sir, I have an interesting question for you as a female, and that sounds worse than it is. you know, Catherine Bigelow is arguably the most feted. I mean, she won the Best Director Oscar, female director. But it's strange that the body of her work is primarily what you would call male pictures, very action-oriented, very, you know, gruff masculine films. Do you have any thoughts on that or any opinion on that disconnect?
I think it's always amazing when people transcend the boundaries or stereotypes that they've been kind of given.
Well, you yourself said that you feel you write male voices better than female.
Oh, absolutely. Everyone tells me that.
But, you know, why not someone like why can't there be, I think Sofia Coppola would be the closest thing to a female director who makes movies that feel like they're coming from, I'm going to get in trouble by Andrea for this, makes movies that feel like they're coming from a female perspective, and I mean that in the best possible way. The way that Virginia Woolf or Edith Wharton or, the Brontes or Jane Austen had a female perspective that was brilliant and unique. Why does it have to be that the only female directors that get this kind of attention are the ones that are making man pictures?
I don't know that I agree with that. I mean, look at what's her name? Myers, Nancy Myers gets a lot of attention. I mean,
yeah,
she gets commercial attention.
She's really a more popular director than Sofia Coppola.
Right.
Much more. And Sofia Coppola, it's weird because I think her films, with the exception of maybe Marie Antoinette, I think there's also a lot, she deals with a lot of, like, The Virgin Suicides, I feel, is very much a film about men, about boys, more than it is about girls, because those girls are more of an ideal that the boys in the neighborhood hold up as what they want, more so than even characters at times.
Right. I think that's a good point. That's good. But really, at the core, I do. If we are talking male versus female in general, and getting into the entertainment stuff, Todd Phillips always says, "Women just aren't funny."
Well, Todd,
at the core, they're just. I think they're because we give birth. You know, there's something heavier about our existence.
Wait, do you agree with that?
You know, to an extent, I would say on screen, I would rather watch two bros giving each other grief.
But you know what? On TV, in particular, all my favorite comedies have main female. Parks and Recreation, 30 Rock, Girls, New Girl,
are you gay? No, I'm just
But I mean, most of my favorite shows, like, I would say the funniest people on television now are women. I'll take Amy Poehler's performance on Parks and Rec above any comedic male performance right now, probably, you know? Julia Louis-Dreyfus on Veep, another good example.
What about movies?
I feel, unfortunately, maybe there aren't enough showcases for this right now.
Jessica Chastain is hilarious in Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Bridesmaids last year, but, yeah. You know, I keep seeing these trailers for all these Melissa McCarthy movies, and they're not doing it for me because she just seems to be playing the same character.
They basically found the female John Candy.
Right.
I think we're starting to see.
Wouldn't you say though? But you're prejudging the Melissa McCarthy movies based on having seen the film.
And let me say something. I got to transition here because let me talk about prejudging movies. Two of the best movies out right now, as I said, are Zero Dark Thirty and Django Unchained. But all these people before these movies even fucking come out, all we're hearing are these different things about the movies. These like reasons like we should be weary of them, or reasons. I'm going to start with Zero Dark Thirty. And John McCain and Diane Feinstein, they've even written letters to Sony because they say that it grossly, inaccurately, and misleadingly portrays the torture and the role torture had in the hunt for Bin Laden. Problem is, these idiots in the Senate, who should be dealing with, you know, the fiscal cliff and all this stuff, they haven't seen the film. They don't know what it portrays torture doing. And let me say this. Torture, whether it worked or not, did portray a role. We tortured people. This is what we do. Maybe you don't want to think about it, McCain, but we fucking tortured people. It's in the fucking movie. You're going to have to deal with it. So, Zero Dark Thirty getting all this prejudging. Then Spike Lee comes along with Django Unchained, and he tweets that American slavery was not a Sergio Leone spaghetti western. It was a Holocaust. My ancestors are slaves stolen from Africa. I will honor them. Basically saying that the film trivializes slavery. Spike will not see the film. I have seen this film, and it treats slavery in a horrific manner. Slaves are abused in a way that not only haunts you as the audience, but haunts the characters in the film and causes them to maybe make some rash decisions. So, I don't think that's trivializing. You should see the fucking movie, Spike Lee. And get this, I could have easily prejudged some of your films in the past. I could have prejudged Do the Right Thing and said, well, this film's just going to stir racial prejudice. But guess what? No, I went to go see Do the Right Thing, and instead I saw probably the most insightful film about race ever made. So you're already a polarizing filmmaker. You should be, you shouldn't be judging anyone's work before you see it. So fuck you, Spike Lee, for prejudging Django Unchained, a great movie, and fuck you, John McCain, and the entire United States Senate for prejudging Zero Dark Thirty. You're the enemy of the podcast this week.
I think we should solve this. I think Spike Lee, John McCain, and Dianne Feinstein need to do a double feature together of Zero Dark Thirty and Django Unchained.
Baked in.
Baked in.
I mean, John McCain's favorite TV show was 24. That is a show that trivialized torture. He would torture someone, they'd give him the information. Nowhere in Zero Dark Thirty is there a scene where they torture someone and then he goes, Bin Laden's over here. In fact, the scene where he gives up the information, it's over a meal. Yeah. It's not while directly being tortured. Now, you might be splitting hairs there, but quite frankly, he has no leg to stand on without seeing the film. And I don't know. I'm bothered by the Spike Lee thing. I think mostly because it's coming from an artist.
What was the movie he did with the bank heist a few years ago?
Inside Man.
Inside Man. I thought that movie was kind of anti-Semitic.
It probably was.
Yeah. I thought it was sort of racist and anti-Semitic. It bugged me. But
all his films deal with race in a way that you could prejudge. You know, Malcolm X. I mean, these are Malcolm X. Do the Right Thing. These are great films, but you could have easily
Brooklyn,
prejudged
Brooklyn, Get on the Bus.
Films. I mean, that's not a bad film either, Get on the Bus. But there also is the problem that with the use of the word nigger. And I say it because, much like Sam Jackson, I feel has said, if you're going to have an adult conversation about a word, you should be able to say the word. And people are complaining about the use in the film. Now, you saw, now you mentioned, you said the N-word before. Did you, were you bothered by that? Did that take you aback, Sarah, when you were watching the film?
I just wasn't up. It was my mood. Honestly, I don't want to even have an objective opinion on this movie. I just wasn't in the mood. You know what I mean?
I
it's
hear
like
you.
Of all the eras to relive. Ugh.
But I think that, see, your reaction is kind of the reason why I like We Relive It, because it should be a tough pill to swallow. Like, hearing characters say nigger should be a hard thing to swallow. It should be upsetting and uncomfortable.
But why relive it? Like, why? There's so much darkness and negativity in the world. Like, why relive it?
Well, you can always make the argument that if you don't relive the past, you're doomed to repeat it. Granted, this is a sensationalized version and a bit of a revenge fantasy,
but it also gives, I mean, honestly, it's a Western meets blaxploitation. It gives a black revenge fantasy, and quite frankly, I think it's good to have a film with a strong black lead who's out to do something good. He wants to save a woman he loves, which is a lot more positive than a lot of, unfortunately, representations in media that we get.
So now you're taking on Tyler Perry.
Well, but you know what? I mean, to certain language, 1858 Mississippi, if racist plantation owners didn't say these things, it would be disingenuous. And
No, you're right. But the choice to even... You know, I'm not even questioning him as an artist. I mean, I think the story structure was great. I thought it was compelling. It was moving. And the performances were amazing. I just... Of all the... You know, I don't know. Like, I would have rather had another movie about Nixon.
Ooh, well, you can't have enough Nixon movies.
I think it's...
Can we get to talk about Oliver Stone later? Because I hope we do.
We've talked about Oliver Stone quite a bit on this show. We're not going to talk about Dick. The movie, not the thing.
I don't know what you two are doing in that studio.
I was at a party. I just want to say this quick. I was at a party, and a guy was complaining about the use of the word nigger in Pulp Fiction. And he was this middle-class white guy, and he was getting so indignant about it, and so indignant about Tarantino using this word, and I got so angry at him. Well, one, I was forced to defend the word at a party, which is awkward enough. But two, I don't feel that middle-class white guy should be the arbiter of when we can and can't say it in art. Like, I felt like this was not the battle he should be fighting.
That's fair.
Was this... This wasn't recently. This was back when Pulp Fiction was in.
No, this was recently.
Oh.
Because we were talking about the Django thing, and he said, I didn't like when Quentin said dead nigger storage, and you know. Yeah. But he said dead N-word storage in our argument. And again, I can't take that argument seriously if you can't even say the word. Well, I've never actually heard anyone use the word in hate. In actual hate.
I have, like, and it cuts hard. When, like, you hear it, all of a sudden you go, whoa.
Like, I've never been around somebody who said it, and it was like, I've heard it, like, in, like,
a Tarantino movie,
quoting something, or maybe in just a bad taste joke, but never in true hate. But then again, I've only lived in New York and Los
Angeles.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing, is I'm from Texas, so it's like, I just witnessed so much of it, like, the real, just, like, genuine disdain for blacks. That it's hard for me to stomach it. I'm not usually, like, the PC gal, but I just wasn't in the mood.
But, I mean...
I'm not going to solve this here.
I'm going to solve the racial problems in the world. I was also equally in... I mean, I don't know.
Well, I guess in my mind, it's like, racism's just such old news. Like, I'd rather see, like, really blatant misogyny.
Well, you and I, Sarah, why don't we write that movie?
We will. Let's do it.
Let's...
Actually, I've been kind of bickering with some executives we're developing this feature with, because I want the woman, like the female in the movie, to be an outright gold-digging whore. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, you know, we want to make sure to not seem like we hate women. But I'm like, there really are awful women out there, and they're not portrayed.
Believe me, I've dated many of them.
I don't know what you're speaking about. All women are treasures to be admired and placed on a pedestal far above our heads.
I reject their values. They're so into shoes, these whores.
And on that note...
I like you, Sarah. I like you, Sarah. I always like to throw in a weird thing at the end of each episode, a weird topic, and this struck me as odd. I saw this video the other day. A shark tank at a mall in Shanghai... Why they have sharks in a mall, I don't know. It exploded, and sharks were unleashed upon the customers.
Oh.
This is amazing to me.
Isn't this the plot of Jaws 3?
I mean, it sounds like a fucking sci-fi channel movie, like mall shark.
Greenlit, done.
Can you get us, can the three of us, Sarah, write mall shark? Can you get us a mall shark deal?
We gotta buy the rights. I'm sure someone already got the rights.
Damn it, to the mall sharks. No, but wasn't this Jaws 2? Or no,
Jaws
3. Jaws
3, he attacks like a SeaWorld type place.
Yeah, and he's basically he's smashing through the glass trying to get through to them. Ugh.
But this is, I mean, you know why they say it burst, the tank burst? Climate change. It burst because of climate change.
Why?
They said the pressure, it was unusually cold in Shanghai.
Oh, and it caused the glass to contract.
And the shark, and then... Apparently, all the people were okay, but three sharks died.
Oh. Well, you know what this means. Chinese engineers haven't yet bested American engineers.
That's right. You never see any of our mall shark tanks explode.
Yes, they would get eaten at the Mall of America.
Fuck you, China. You don't know how to make a shark tank.
You better watch out. China owns us.
China owns this podcast, actually.
Ni hao.
We have a... Here's the dark secret. We have huge numbers. We have a billion Chinese listening, but only three people in America listen. And so it's frustrating. So you better hope they get Wedding Band over in China.
Brian Austin Green plays huge in Shangdong.
Yeah, hold your breath on that one.
I know it's hard to believe, Sarah, but it's that time. It's starting to get time to wrap up here.
This was lovely. It really was. Time flew.
Thank you so much.
Before we go, once again... Season finale, Wedding Band, January 19th, Saturday, January 19th. Catch up on the show. Anything else you'd like to plug? Anything
else
you'd like to say?
Do you have a blog or any funnies on the internet, anything like that? Any stand-up?
No, I mean, I do some stand-up here or there. I'll keep you up to date.
Okay.
Do you have, like, a website or anything?
You know, no. I'm so bad at self-promotion. I gotta get on it, right?
Do you have a Twitter?
You know, I have a Twitter page, but I kind of have been using it more for Torah.
Okay.
I know.
Well, I don't even know, how would this work? What is this about?
You know, my hobby is studying the Old Testament. So, like, you know, because when you're getting paid to be funny...
Oh,
like...
that same Old Testament that doesn't want me jerking off? That Old Testament?
Oh, that old Testament?
That pesky little thing. Yeah. Look, I mean, actually, this has been a very inspiring experience because it reminds me that this whole thing, you know, it's a business, and I gotta pretend like I'm a hot commodity, right?
There you go. Well, when you come back, we're gonna write our opus, "Damn That Bitch."
I love it.
Yeah.
Well.
Okay.
Okay. Well, so there's nothing to plug, but if you have stuff to plug down the road, please tell us. We'll put it up on the Facebook page and we'll promote the shit.
Because we will have over 500 fans come December 31st, 2013.
Awesome.
Sean, plug away.
Right. We got to do this. Sorry, I'm a little rusty here. It's been a couple weeks.
You were rusty before.
I was always rusty. I'm like the Tin Man. Is that the guy? Yeah, it's Tin Man. The Sean David. Follow me on Twitter at The Sean David. Facebook. I have been doing quite a bit of writing. I'm hoping to put something out very soon. Been a busy little bee, so look forward to that. And in the meanwhile, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, letterpress.
All your fucking games. All you do is play fucking games.
I don't just do fucking games.
I know.
So there will be stuff hopefully in the next couple of months I'll be putting out there. I'm planning to drop a bomb on all you people with just a deluge of content. You're going to say, enough, no more, we can't take it.
I want more. I want to be like Naomi Watts in The Impossible. I want to get hit by a tsunami of Sean.
Yeah. That's what happens to a girl if I'm not allowed to masturbate, so.
Ooh, callback.
I think this will be a callback for weeks. Did you say your Twitter?
Yeah, at The Sean David.
I wasn't paying attention.
No, you weren't.
And you can follow me at The Real Will Link. You could also listen to me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on The PM Show with Larry Minetti at crntalk.com. I review movies, and you will hear me talk about them there. Much like you heard me talk about them here, but I'll probably drop less hard ends. You can also read articles of mine at U1 Cannes, like the city in France. I have an article up there now about this very topic, about prejudging films before you see them, specifically Zero Dark Thirty and Django Unchained. And also, by time this episode's up, if the editor over there is done her job, my top 10 movies of the year article will be up, so you could read all of that. Sarah. Oh wait. Oh, next week on the show. Yes. I almost ended without plugging. This I'm bad at every week. Next week on the show, we got a great guest, Jack Dalton. This man has written a book, "Hesitation Leads to Masturbation: A Gentleman's Guide to Getting Laid," and we are going. I have a feeling this episode may be a perfect companion piece to that one. We're going to be talking about. He's going to tell us why we're not having more sex.
Speak for yourself.
and then the following week is the Will Sean podcast.
What you've all been waiting for.
Yeah, you've all been waiting for. The Oscar nominees will be out, so it's going to be me and Sean breaking all that down. And
woo!
Yeah, it's exciting stuff. And then after that, the big 50th episode celebration. End of season one of Will Sean podcast. It's a year anniversary. It's going to be great. So, people, tune in.
Good stuff coming, and then, thank you so much. We're looking forward to a great year, and as much as we yell and we scream, we love each and every one of you.
I actually do. If I don't say fuck you to you, then you should be worried.
Once again, Sarah, thank you so much. Have a wonderful year.
Thanks a lot, guys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And with that,
I think we're finished.
We're finished.